The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcoming to the latest edition of ESPN FC, I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Gab Marcotti here to discuss Inter Milan solidifying their place as title favourites in Italy after a 1-0 victory against Atalanta. But for now, we welcome Stevie Nicol, who's with me in the studio. Also, Frank LaBeouf and Don Hutchison are with us to reflect on Chelsea's 2-0 victory over Everton. And Stevie, I feel drawn to you as one of Thomas Tuchel's biggest critics. Surely now you've got to give him a bit of credit.
I don't understand this. I'm his biggest critic. I'm just telling you that things that he's doing, Frank Lampard was doing as well. Now, this game against Everton, there's no question. They were a class above Everton today. You know, the way they move the ball from the back to the middle to the front is fantastic.
Right.
But Frank Lampard's teams were doing that. The difference between this team and Frank's team is they're not giving up goals.
So that is a difference. That's a big difference.
Well, it is a difference, but the truth is that if Frank was the manager of any other team in the Premier League, he wouldn't have got the sack. That's kind of my argument, because this Chelsea side were at the top of the Premier League because they had a great defensive unit and it had a horrible patch. Yes, can't deny that. Now they've gone back to what they do best. And as far as scoring goals, the last nine Premier League games that Frank Lampard was in charge, they had 12 goals. Guess what? Nine games in the Premier League, the last nine games that Tuchel's been in charge, guess what? 12 goals in nine games. Exactly the same. That is why I'm arguing for Frank Lampard. I'm not saying Tuchel's a bad coach. I'm just telling you that.
But it's
not
that goals
a huge
against.
Change.
It's that goals against, isn't it?
Yes.
11 games,
100%.
No defeats. That is the big caveat to your argument.
100%. Yeah, can't argue with that at all.
Don, what do you think? Do you agree with what Stevie's saying?
I sort of do and I don't. The only thing I would say, Dan, is and I was trying to be loyal towards Frank, being a good friend of mine and the job that he'd done. But at the same time, when I watched Chelsea under Frank, I thought they were a little bit vulnerable. I thought they were a soft touch. I wasn't sure what results they were going to get. They were 50-50 games sometimes. The majority of them went with him and some went against him. But I've got to say, Thomas Tuchel's come in and done extremely well. You know, 11 games in, 9 clean sheets. That is impressive. And I thought that was their best performance tonight against Everton. I thought they looked sharp. Kai Havertz looked fit. He potentially could add a couple of goals, one chalked off for a handball and one chalked off that it was an own goal. But I just think there's been a change, I think, in the mentality amongst the Chelsea players.
Frank, you've been a big critic of Kai Havertz since he made that big move from Germany. Was this his best game in the Chelsea shirt today?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's an encouraging performance, even if I think he can do much better, because I saw him playing for Leverkusen last season, and he was much, much better than even today. So, of course, I'm expecting a lot from a talented player, and not because of the price that he's been paid or he's been transferred. It's just because of the quality that he showed when he was playing in the German League. I'm sure he can do much better, but he's on his way back to his best, and I wish him the best. You know, we don't have many things to say about that game. Chelsea deserved to win. I think Everton was really poor, didn't show much during that game. Chelsea did what they know what to do. It means defending well, as TV said, and they scored 2 goals, and that's it. And they had 4 or 5 chances by especially Timo Werner to score another goal. But don't forget that we were waiting in the corner for Chelsea by the game that they had. Atletico and some other games, Liverpool, now Everton, and they won all those games. So they're doing great right now. Nothing much to say. It's not very entertaining, I would say, but they do the job.
Don, you mentioned a change in mentality. How has Tuchel done it?
I think by hard work, Dan. I think he's worked on the defence. It's quite clear that he's went for clean sheets before trying to get his operators at the top end of the pitch flowing. You see Christian Pulisic's hardly played. Kai Havertz has hardly played. Timo Werner's slightly coming back to form, not at his best. He was on at him all game. He was shouting and screaming at him all game. So he obviously wants more from him. But I think you can see what he's building and what he's trying to do. And he's trying to make them tight at the back. And that's what you've got to do as a manager. It's okay when you're beating teams by 3 and 4 and you look good and you look silky and everything's going your way. But when you come into a job, you've got to get the major players on board. You've got to instill what, you know, you're the boss. It's going to be your way or you'll be out, even though Thomas Tuchel might be there for a couple of years, probably at best. But you're seeing his results. And as the boy's saying, it's not spectacular, but you're guaranteed now as a Chelsea fan, when you're watching them, they're going to be tight and hard to beat.
Someone who's obviously impressed since Tuchel's taken over. You've got Alonso that has come in, Stevie, and also Thomas Tuchel has brought in Hudson-Odoi more and more as well.
Yep.
What's the difference between the way in which a manager sees these players? So why is Tuchel using them more? What is he liking that they do that Frank Lampard didn't?
Well, you know, the difference the way he's playing, he's particularly asking the likes of Dyche when he plays on that side to come inside. And Hudson-Odoi, at his best, is a guy going at the fullback. So little situations like that is why he plays Hudson-Odoi. Because he's probably the purest winger that Chelsea have in the squad. And Thomas Tuchel, as a coach, obviously likes watching one of his attackers going after a fullback. And so if you don't play him, that doesn't really happen. So that would be one suggestion why Hudson-Odoi has played more under Thomas Tuchel.
Well, as Frank mentioned, it was a tough run for Chelsea and they've come through it with flying colours and it leaves them fourth in the table. West Ham, though, won't let them go. West Ham with that victory against Leeds today. 2 points off Chelsea in fourth. Leicester, meanwhile, of course, could be dragged into it. Them setting the world on fire with 10 matches to go. Just 3 points separate them and West Ham, the Hammers, with that game in hand. Don, let's start with you. Who are we going for that top four? City United, I think we can pen in now.
Yeah, I think so. And even though Chelsea are sitting in fourth behind Leicester, I give Chelsea more chance of getting third. I think Leicester, with all their injuries and being a little bit inconsistent, and they're carrying such a massive injury list, it's going to be hard for them to try and hang on. But you know, there's some big chases. I was at Tottenham yesterday doing the Tottenham game and they were terrific. It was almost a complete performance apart from Christian Benteke's header just before our time. But Gareth Bale was superb with the brace. Harry Kane got 2 goals and 2 assists. Son was flying. Moura was flying. The bench was Bergwijn, Lamella. Terrific players. Vinicius, another one on the bench. Dele Alli. So he's got an embarrassment to riches. So I don't think there's anyone just outside the top four at the moment that's in great form, Dan. I think the form horses are sitting in the top four. But anyone can come from anywhere. This is the beauty of the Premier League. You know, Spurs have won 3 on the spin. Everton before tonight had won 3 on the spin to get them in top four. So it just takes a mini run.
It is the only beauty, really, considering the title is wrapped up, Frank. But looking at this race for the top four, who have you got?
Well, I'm pretty pleased with what I see right now. 3 out of 4 of my prediction are in the top four.
No one cares about that.
Yes, I'm... No, but I do care, because you asked me the question and you cared at the time, you know, and you say, well, how come Leicester, Chelsea, second, and well, I'm pretty okay. Manchester United is a big surprise for me, but good for them. And I don't see anybody else, you know, getting in there, because I think even Leicester will just corrected the situation the last game, and they're going to stay like that. So what will be the order? I don't know. Maybe we'll stay like that. Maybe Chelsea will come above Leicester, but I don't see anything changing from there.
So is that it for Liverpool now?
For Liverpool, yes.
Not top four. Done.
I don't see it. I think the fact that he made so many changes, Klopp at the weekend, that he's kind of putting all his eggs in the Champions League basket.
Is that the right basket to put your eggs?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, because right now, regardless of the opposition, they don't look like they're going to beat anybody. You know, and the fact is they've lost to a team in the bottom three, another team in the bottom three. So, yeah, I think they're doing the right thing. And you look at the side that was out there. I mean, 3 of that back four wouldn't get a game in most of the Premier League sides. So, yeah, I think he's doing the right thing.
So what happens, Stevie, regarding mentality for these other league games? Because it's very difficult to sell the Europa League, I imagine, to these players that have won the Champions League and the league in the two previous seasons. Mm. So you just go out there and go through the motions? How is it all going to work?
Well, Klopp has to try and G them up before they step on the field for the Premier League games. And that's not easy because, you know, as a player, when you are not playing in that game at the weekend and you know you're going to be playing in the Champions League, that just sends the message that, you know what, the gaffer's put all their eggs in that basket. So it's up to individuals now to step on the field and, you know, the old classic, play for the jersey. That's what it is, because it seems like they've settled for not getting in the top four.
But then, Don, what happens if, for example, Leipzig come back against Anfield and beat them, and then that's your whole season is in complete and utter turmoil, even more than it is now?
Well, it probably is anyway, Dan. I mean, listen, the chances are Liverpool will probably get through against Leipzig. I wouldn't bet on it, but they probably will, having a 2-0 lead. But do you fancy them to go any further? I can't remember a team that's been champions over the years, Dan, and are close to 10th in their domestic league and went on and won the Champions League. I can't remember it. And why would you give any hope of Liverpool winning the Champions League? Why would you? Just because they've got a 2-0 lead against Leipzig. Look at the teams that are left in the Champions League and look how many teams Liverpool are losing against. You know, Jurgen Klopp gave his players at the weekend no chance of winning that game against Fulham. I tweeted an hour and a half before when the team sheets came in, and it reminded me of time, Dan, when I played for Sunderland, actually ironically against Liverpool at the Stadium of Light, and the manager at the time for Liverpool took a massive liberty with a starting 11, and we used that as our advantage, you know, at Sunderland when we were there with Peter Reid, and we pinned that on the board, and we said, this manager and this club think they can turn up and just roll us over against Sunderland. I'm pretty sure Scotty Parker done exactly the same thing. I'm pretty sure he put that Liverpool 11 up and said, look what these think about us. And the scoreline in the end, in my opinion, Dan, it flattered Liverpool. It could have been 2 or 3.
Yeah, but Don, I'm sorry. Even with the setup changing, you know, and the individuals being not the same, don't tell me that the Liverpool setup last game against Fulham wasn't capable of winning against Fulham.
It wasn't.
I'm very sorry.
It wasn't, Frank.
You know,
it wasn't, Frank. Shaqiri had no rhythm.
He shouldn't be.
Shaqiri had no rhythm. You know, he's been in and out the side. Naby Keita hasn't been fit, so he's just got back in the side. Jota has only played one game. He's had 2 or 3 months off. Three of the back four changed. What made you think that Liverpool team, a disjointed Liverpool team, are going to beat Fulham? Just because Fulham are in the bottom three, they're a good side.
Frank, yeah, but because they've been hired by Liverpool. I'm sorry, Dan, but they've been hired by Liverpool because they know their quality. Of course, some players just came back from injuries or pandemic, whatever it is. But they haven't been hired by Fulham because Fulham cannot hire those kind of players because they are higher level than any Fulham players. So therefore, they should be able to win against Fulham, and they have no excuses anymore than not doing everything to win games at home against Fulham.
Then I don't see Nico Williams, Reece Williams, and Nat Phillips being a higher level than the Fulham defenders. And that's just three.
So, Frank, that takes us back to this takes us back to this mentality talk, isn't it? And it fascinates me from a team that has won the Premier League and then the Champions League in the last two seasons, training, just day-to-day, preparing for matches that they just don't care about. How does this play out from now until the end of the season? There's still 10 games left in the Premier League.
Well, you know, you play for jersey, you play for some colours, you play for history, and you have to put your pride on top of everything else. And you know, I remember Wimbledon being able to win the FA Cup before I signed for Chelsea. I remember that with Dennis Wise and everything. They were not a fantastic team, but they had the pride, they had their heart. And all the players of Liverpool have to react and think about the fans, the club, the history, to make sure that they at least going to finish well the Premier League. It's part of your job. You're a professional player, and you have to do everything in order to correct the situation, because that's really embarrassing right now what we see. We are talking about players, most of the players, who won the Champions League 2 years ago and the Premier League a year ago. That's unacceptable what we are seeing. Even if we can find all excuses about about the pandemic, about the injuries and everything. At the end of the day, you have 25 players and most of them should be able to win against Fulham. Even if Fulham are very, very upset about the fact that Klopp is putting the B or the C team, they're still the C team of Liverpool. So this should be enough, good enough to win against Fulham.
Is it harder to do without fans?
100%. Listen, the game's about emotion. A huge part of the game is about emotion. So when there's no fans there, there is no emotion. And, you know, people are forgetting, the worst players or the average player going to Anfield with no fans is just playing a normal game. Because your average player going to Anfield with a crowd can't perform anywhere near the standard because they bottle it. And the best example of that would be Raheem Sterling at Anfield this year. No crowd. It's the best game he's ever had at Anfield since he left. And the reason? No crowd. So the no crowd situation completely annihilates Liverpool more than the opposition. No question.
Can you believe Frank brought up Wimbledon for no reason, Steve?
Yeah, cheers, Frank.
Yeah, I know. Unbelievable.
I've forgotten about that.
Frank, Don and Stevie, my guests on Extra Time. You can check that out, as always, over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Big win for Inter Milan on Monday, defeating Atalanta by 1-0. Skriniar with the only goal of the game, but it proved enough to give Antonio Conte's side 3 precious points, and it extends their lead at the top of the table back to 6 points ahead of AC Milan. Frank and Don still with us. Gab Marcotti as well. Don, not the prettiest of wins for Inter, but of course they'll take it.
Massive win, Dan. And I got the feeling after the game when Antonio Conte was celebrating with his players who were quite tense in the dying seconds of the game. There's always a game where they feel as though they're going to be champions. And it was when the final whistle went, all the players were on the pitch, including the manager. They realised how big it was. It was actually a really entertaining game. It was a good game of football. Both goalkeepers not tested too much. Defenders came out on top. Romero was brilliant for Atalanta. Skriniar was excellent for Inter. Jim City played well. Really good, entertaining game of football. Skriniar with a finish into the bottom corner. But I've got to say, Atalanta pushed really hard in the second half. They probably just about deserved something out of the game, but a real entertaining game.
Handanovic making some key say-so for Inter, Gab, we saw.
Yeah, Handanovic coming up big on Duvan Zapata. I think Don photographed the game very well. You know, Inter came out there with a very specific plan. Atalanta came out to attack. They were happy to give them the ball. Inter tried to hit on the break. And then once the goal came, they hung in there. It's quite interesting, actually, Skriniar talking after the game. He made the point that this having a whole week off between games, it's an absolute game changer. He said, we were actually able to prepare for this game. We watched videos. We went through tactical situations. We did all these things that teams that are still in Europe, teams that are playing twice a week, simply don't have the luxury of doing. And he felt it made all the difference. It's not just about avoiding fatigue playing once a week. You can actually train and prepare for matches.
Frank, what was your big takeaway from this game?
The way Inter Milan defended. I mean, defending that way is an art. Of course, we were expecting the two teams to attack and score goals because they both scored 122 goals since the beginning of the Serie A this season. But at the end of the day, it's really what Inter Milan is capable of doing. And we all know that in Italy, at a certain time, some years ago, some decades ago, it was really a religion to know how to defend well. And I found back the essence of the Italian football today with Inter defending. All together, very well prepared, very tuned in, working hard with a fantastic and maybe one of the best goalkeepers in the world. And, you know, everybody's getting very nervous. The way you play doesn't really matter right now. It's to get the 3 points what matters, because we're almost close to the, well, we're close to the end, and you have to get the most points you can.
Let's do it, Don.
Go on.
Percentage chance of Inter winning the league.
Well, listen, the win against Atalanta was massive, Dan, because it took them right out of the equation. If Atalanta had won, I would have given Atalanta more chance than the likes of Juve or Roma. So they've took Atalanta, Juve, Roma right out of the equation. So a two-horse race between the Milan clubs. I think they have to be strong. They're six clear. They've got some big fixtures. You know, they've got Napoli, Roma, Juve to come. But it's looking pretty... Listen, percentages is difficult. But I'd fancy them big time. I really would. I don't see Inter blowing it from here.
Dog, you know you won't get away with it.
All right. 70%.
70%?
Yeah.
Don says that Juventus are out of it, Gab. Do you agree?
I don't think they're quite out of it because there's the head-to-head, but clearly this was a huge win. And you saw how they celebrated at the end as if they'd won the Champions League. You saw Eriksen there. How many times do you see him just booting the ball into row Z? I mean, Christian Eriksen doing that. I think they're steely. I think they're committed. I'd said 60% before. I'm going to bump it up to 70.
Oh, all right.
Yes, then. Gab.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Isn't that what Don said? Anyway, Juventus, meanwhile, taking on Porto. Juve go into this game 2-1 down in the Champions League. The bookies still have them as favourites, Gab. What's the feeling in Italy going into this tie?
Well, I think the sense is that you can't screw this up. And you can't screw this up for financial reasons, first and foremost. Mm. And you can't screw it up because of the fact that you're Juventus. And, you know, Porto right now are not an exceptional side. Juventus gifted them two goals in the first leg. All they have to do is beat them 1-0. And, you know, if you can't do that, then simply put, you don't deserve to go through. So there is a bit of apprehension, but there's also encouragement. A lot of guys coming back from injury. Obviously, there'll be no Bentancur, no Danilo, who's suspended. But, you know, they don't have that alibi either. Cristiano's rested because he came on as a sub at the weekend. So I think there is a quiet confidence, but also a lot of respect and a lot of awareness of all the things that can go wrong.
Of course, we'll be discussing that on the next edition of the show. Be sure to join us. We'll be reflecting on that massive game in Turin. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Plenty of content over there, including reactions to that 1-1 draw between Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid at the weekend. Well, I can tell you the reaction in Spain has been all about the penalty that wasn't given just before the break in the first half. As you welcome back Frank, Don and Gab to the show. Real Madrid felt they should have had a penalty for handball. The referee went over to the monitor, but didn't give the spot kick. Stevie, is this the right decision?
Oh no, this is a handball all day.
I mean, really?
Well, he's completely misjudged the flight of it. It's come off his arm, which is away from his body, and it's going to Casemiro. I don't understand why it's not given.
Atletico Madrid, the official site, tweeting out, some people are used to things always going their way. They criticise even correct decisions. For you, Frank, is it a penalty?
No, it's not for me because the ball is hidden by the two players at front. I think it's Varane and one out of the Atletico defender. And the guy doesn't see the ball coming. We can see that he tries to head it and doesn't really see the ball. And the ball falls into his arm. So therefore, it's not. But I have a question. You know, France, Croatia, final of the World Cup.
We're not talking about Frank. We're not talking about the World Cup, Frank. We don't have time to talk about that.
I just want to say for the same action, they gave a penalty. And now they don't give a penalty. I want to know what the rule is. That's it. For the same action, the guy doesn't
Nobody
see
knows
the ball
the
coming.
Rule. That's the problem.
Touch his arm, they gave a penalty. In this action, they don't.
Right.
Why?
Gab,
how it's possible that they have two...
By the letter of the law,
whatever.
Where are we?
So, look, I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there. All those things that you hear about sort of, you know, the line of the shirt, the bicep, the natural position, the dynamic, all these things are guidelines. There is no letter of the law that says everything is black and white. Referees still have a level of discretion. They're asked to consider those things, and then they're asked, and then that's supposed to go and inform their decision. And I think in this case, correctly, in my opinion, but I wouldn't have had a problem if it had gone the other way, he adjudged the fact, he looked at the fact that, as was mentioned, there were players in front of him. The fact that Casemiro's going to get the ball and score is completely irrelevant. It's just not something you're supposed to consider when judging handball.
But if it's a grey area, surely that's something you take into consideration, Gab. You've just said it's not black and white.
No, it's not. So surely the fact that it's... There's no advantage.
But if we put it all together, you said there's a grey area. If you put it all together, then that has to factor into it if it's going to Casemiro, surely.
Yes, but there's a list of things that you're supposed to factor in, and whether the ball's going to go to Casemiro isn't in the directives. That's just simply not there. So we can tell ourselves that, but it's not what they're supposed to consider. Most important thing to consider here is the natural body position and whether the movement of his arms is congruous or is in line with what you expect from somebody who's jumping to try to head the ball. And in this case, he's coming back down with it and he's trying to bring his arms. And it's normal for his arms to go out to a certain level when he jumps up, and he's trying to bring his arms back in. And that's why the referee didn't deem it to be a punishable handball.
I'm sorry, you go ahead of ball if and
he
hits
has
your
discretion
arm,
there.
Then that's on you. Seriously.
Well, no.
Yeah, I don't think Casemiro.
That's not what the law says, that's what the directives say.
Go on, Frank.
I'm not sure that Casemiro can score. Even if he's behind, and it's why I'm going into Gab's explanation, is even if the defender doesn't touch the ball, Casemiro seems to be in front of the ball if you look at the comparing to the net. So therefore, I don't think he's in a situation where he can score the goal. Might not know, but I would agree with Gab. And for me, it's not a penalty.
Don?
I didn't think it was a penalty. I really didn't. I thought defender was trying to jump,
trying to get
a view of the ball. No, you're in the minority. Well, Steve, you're in the minority.
If you sat on a bench, right, and the opposition does that, it's a penalty kick.
Nah.
And if I'm sat on my own bench and one of my players does it, I'm hiding my head because it's a penalty kick. I don't know where you three are coming from. Seriously.
Yeah, but Stevie, if you're going up for that header and you can't get a true flight of the ball and there's a couple of players in front of you and you are on the way down and your arm is on the way down and the ball then strikes your arm, that can't be deliberate handball. That can't be a penalty. We've got to strip this back and we've got to go, what do you think is a deliberate handball or what do you think is accidental? Start from there and I think we'll be fine.
OK, let's continue the handball discussion, shall we? The referee didn't even go to the monitor for this one, Gab. Juventus, of course, coming from behind in the end to win their clash against Lazio. Should this have been a penalty?
I think it should have been. I suspect, within this discretion, within these guidelines, if it's close by, if the ball is suddenly deflected off the defender's own body and it hits the arm, the referee has the discretion not to give the penalty. However, that's not what happened here. So personally, I think he just made a mistake or he didn't see it clearly and the VAR didn't flag it for him. And by the way, on the VAR, we should point out that, you know, on the previous one, when he went over to look at the monitor and people are like, oh, it always ends one way when they go to the monitor. Mm. No, sometimes referees go to the monitor to get a better look. It's as simple as that. VAR asks him, did you see this clearly? And based on where the referee was in that Atletico game, he didn't have the right depth perception. And that's why he went to the monitor so he could judge what the guy's arm was actually doing, whether it was moving back towards his body or not. So, this one, for me, stonewall penalty.
You agree?
It's a referee's free-for-all then, isn't it? Because Gab's talking about discretion, which supposedly said 2 seconds ago, there's no discretion, it's guidelines. So if they're not rules and they're guidelines, then it's just whatever the referee fancies
so,
on the
so
day.
So is this a penalty for you?
I was conflicted in this, to be honest, because with the challenge and the ball, we see it in slow motion. But the truth is, at the time on the field, it happens really quick. And the ball is because of the challenge, comes up and hits him in the hand. I'm really conflicted. I would say no, but I could understand if the referee gave it. Because when you see it in slow motion, it almost looks like his hand goes towards the ball. But in real time, I would suggest that's not the case.
Frank?
No penalty for me. There is a tackle, and Chiesa is between the two players, the two defenders. And I think the defender who touches the ball with his arm doesn't see the ball because he's hidden by Chiesa. So, you know, even in slow motion, you can realize that he doesn't see the ball coming and he touches his arm accidentally. So, for me, no penalty again.
Don?
Yeah, accidental. We can't chop the arms off these players. The ball took a ricochet up off Chiesa onto Hoot's arm. Then actually straight after that, it then come down on Chiesa's arm. So you see, I think, the third angle where Stevie's right. You see that in real time. It doesn't look like a penalty, but you know something's happening because the Juve players are appealing. Next angle probably be the better one where you actually see it come down off Chiesa. So there's all sorts of ricochets, arm off there, arm off Chiesa. I think the referee's got a good enough view. If he had to give it, I think it's one of them where you go, yeah, I side with the referee. He didn't give it. I still side with him.
Final one. See if we all agree on this decision in the Arsenal game. No penalty, Stevie.
Oh, this is the easiest one of the lot. I mean, seriously. If that's not a penalty, I do not know what it is. Pepe's going past him. The only reason Pepe doesn't get past is because he sticks his arm out to stop the ball getting there. I mean, I don't think it shouldn't get any easier for a referee than this.
Don, you work with former Premier League Chris Foy on a Monday on Premier League TV. He says that isn't a penalty.
Wow.
Who does? Chris.
Chris Foy. Wow.
No, I think he said today, Dan, it was. I think he said it was. I think he's seen it back again.
He wrote an article in which he said the referee got it right. So whether he's changed his mind or he's just edging his bets.
When was that? Yesterday. I don't know. I think like Stevie said, this is a stonewaller. I mean, Pepe appeals for the first one, which wasn't a penalty, and then it hits him again just there. I mean, that is clear as day. I mean, I'm surprised the VAR didn't instruct the referee to go and take a look at the monitor. I think VAR should have just told the referee it was a penalty. If they're not sure, I think the referee now, go to the monitor, go and check for yourself. If the referee goes and walks over, he gives that penalty 10 times out of 10, I'm pretty sure.
Frank, you're the hardest man to please when it comes to penalties. For you, is that a penalty?
It is a penalty, definitely. I mean, nobody can see it otherwise. I mean, that's completely insane. We can see that his arm goes to the ball. It's like, what are you doing, man? You know, did you know that it's forbidden to touch the ball with your arm? Why do you do that? You know, that's what it is for me. So it's penalty, yeah.
So, Gab, just take us into the psyche of the officials as to why the referee wasn't even sent over to the monitor to look at this.
In England, there's a lot of issues with VAR, the way some referees feel about it. You'll recall initially when it was introduced, they said, oh, no. If it's clear and obvious, then they don't need to go to the monitor. And so therefore the decision stands and you need a high threshold, blah, 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 high bar, all this nonsense. Of course, they changed that. For the life of me, I have no idea why, if you're the VAR, you wouldn't go to the referee and say, mate, did you see this clearly? Because I'm pretty sure you didn't, because if you had, this looks like a penalty to me. Go on, you take responsibility for it. That's why we pay you the big bucks. Go look at it. And then, if in good conscience, he says, well, he was too close, Pepe was too close to the defender, didn't have time. If that's his interpretation, then fine. Then we'll just say, well, you interpreted it incorrectly, at least in my opinion. But to not even let him have another look, the referee ends up looking stupid.
That's like the person who's operating the VAR has got nothing to lose whatsoever by sending the referee over to the monitor. Why doesn't he just do it? Like, what's he thinking? He wants to get home earlier?
I have no idea.
It's
but
crazy.
This has been an ongoing thing. I think there are some senior referees, and this wasn't the case here, who I think have quite clearly resisted VAR, but you've seen some bizarro decisions. I'm thinking of the Suchek sending off and whatnot. And I don't quite know what's going on, but this has been an issue time and again in the Premier League. I think more so than in other leagues. Look, there's a lot of people who don't like VAR, and they have their reasons. But, you know, these incidents are pretty extreme. And you know what, Dan? If only we had transparency. If only, you know, somebody at PGMOL came out and issued a release and said, hey, look, and sometimes they do this, and hey, this is why they didn't go to VAR. This is why he didn't decide to go and have another look.
I think it's got to a point, though, Gab, especially after that decision there. I think next season we've got to start hearing the communication between VAR and the referees. I think it has to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep, doing it in Australia, and it certainly helps. Go on, Gab.
No, I just want to say, I mean, that's certainly something that's on the agenda. I think, I don't know if they'll quite go as far as, you know, having those guys with those lovely Australian accents talking. I think more likely what'll happen is they might release a transcript of what they said, or at least, you know, a brief summary in real time afterwards. You don't want to put referees and VARs in situations where, you know, they have to pick their words carefully or whatever, where they feel like they're being watched. You want to have them free to communicate. But equally, you know, I think it would help everybody if the decisions were explained afterwards, because, you know, we in the media are very, very guilty sometimes of not giving these guys a fair shake, and we don't hear their side of the story.
Are you suggesting the transcripts wouldn't be accurate, Stephen?
I'm suggesting that maybe some of the transcripts might get lost somewhere. Just when it suits.
Just a reminder, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast dropped on Monday. As always, you can go and download it over on the website. Jan Arge Fjortoft, driving somewhere, it seems, is their special guest. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Let's head to Germany. Of course, Bayern come from behind to beat Borussia Dortmund at the weekend by 4-2. However, Dortmund fans and indeed players not happy with the third goal for Bayern Munich because they thought there was a foul in the build-up, Stevie. Was there?
100%. You know, some people have said this was shoulder-to-shoulder. It was nothing of the kind. Leroy Sané absolutely catches Chan just at the top of his ribs with his elbow and leans into him. So 100%.
But VAR can't do anything about it, can they? Because it happened a million months.
No, they can't. It's just a bad decision from the referee. That's bluntly what it is.
And that's how it all led up to the goal. It was this shoulder barge here. And Marco Reus
not a shoulder barge at all, G.
All right, the foul there. Marco Reus then not happy, saying the incident before the third goal was a clear foul. If that had been against Bayern, he would have blown the whistle 100%. That's just the way it is. So let's welcome in, shall we, Casey Keller and Derek Ray. Derek, this has caused quite the stir in Germany.
It certainly has. And Marco Reus, who had plenty to say about the incident in the immediate aftermath of the game, has now been admonished by the DFB, by the control body, for his comments, because he is the captain and they feel that he should be more careful with his language. He thought that had it been the other way, it would have gone in favour of Bayern. I find myself here actually disagreeing with Stevie. I think that was okay, that decision by Marco Fritz. I think it was a measured decision. I think that it's one that you can maybe argue either way, but I think Marco Fritz had been trying to let the play flow. I think, let's face it, Emre Can can look after himself. We've been saying that Leroy Sané needs to maybe look after himself more, the defensive side of the game. And to me, there is contact in the game, and Stevie knows that because there was contact when he played it. So respectful disagreement from me. I think it was correct. I do agree as well. VAR had no way of going back to look at that 33 seconds between the incident and the goal. And the DFB referees body has come out saying that they think Marco Fritz did everything right with regard to that decision and all the other big decisions on the night.
Casey, you have the deciding vote.
Look, I thought it was a foul. I mean, I it wasn't called. It was, as Derek mentioned, 33 seconds. I mean, it wasn't going to get called back from VAR at that point. Yeah, I can understand the frustration of Dortmund. They once again saw a Clásico slip from their grasp, and it's frustrating when that happens. But we know Dortmund are as strong as they are, but Bayern are just that much stronger. And even given them a two-goal lead, Bayern still peg them back. And was it a foul? Probably. Was it called? No. Was it a deciding factor in this match? No.
What about a penalty that we saw as well that Borussia Dortmund could have had just here, Stevie?
Well, I think this is a penalty kick. You know, Kimmich gets the wrong side of Royce, and that means that he's responsible for making sure he doesn't get his legs tangled up. So it's a penalty kick. You know, Royce does nothing here. Kimmich is the one that comes from behind, gets his legs tangled, so it's a penalty kick.
Derek, do you once again respectfully disagree?
I'm going to, yeah. Stevie and I think, are just looking at this differently today. I think it could have been given. I think it's one of those ones that falls in the grey zone. It could have been given, but it wasn't given. I don't think it was stonewall. And I think
there's
once you're in the grey zone...
there's nothing grey about it. It's the defender. It's the defender's responsibility. As a defender, it's your responsibility. If you get caught on the wrong side, you don't tangle your legs up with your opponent who's running in the box. And that's exactly what happened. There's no grey to it whatsoever.
Well, I think there is. And again, I would take you back to what the DFB referees said. They've had a look at it. And by the way, they're quite critical of the referees when they think they've done something wrong. And they didn't think that the referee did anything wrong in this case. They did say it was, you know, one of those ones that could have been given but didn't have to be given. And so, yeah, I mean, if you're a Dortmund fan, then you're going to feel hard done to. I think that there's no doubt about that. But again, VAR is not going to have a look at that and say that's a clear and obvious error. They're going to say, as I said, it could be given, but it wasn't given. That's just my opinion. Sorry, Stevie. I know that we're totally disagreeing today. We don't always.
Casey?
I was surprised. I think after the Dehoud decision, when they went back and had a look at it and rightfully called it a penalty for Bayern, I was surprised on this occasion they didn't at least just say to the referee, hey, we think you should go back and have a closer look at this and see if what exactly to the point that Stevie made is that Kimmich is on the wrong side. The leg gets brought in. It tangles up. And he's brought down, and that I thought it was worth at least the refereeing having a second look at it.
Well, poor decisions or not, Borussia Dortmund lose. They, of course, will be looking to bounce back midweek against Sevilla. And they go into this game, of course, big favourites. 3-2 on aggregate going into this tie. Dortmund 7-1 on to advance to the quarterfinals. Derek, they should be good for this, shouldn't they?
They should be. They were impressive in the first leg. Actually, that first leg really kick-started the good run that they were on going into the Bayern game. But you can take nothing for granted against a savvy European side like Sevilla. Erling Haaland's going to be interesting. We all noted that he was replaced early in the game against Bayern. It turned out it wasn't directly because of that injury he picked up. It was more because he's had a lot of games recently. And, of course, Dortmund are mindful of how important the Champions League is. So I would expect him to be there. But, of course, when you don't have somebody like Guerrero, who's been in wonderful form all season, then that is a big blow. Others are going to have to step up. So this could still be touch and go, but I think Borussia Dortmund should have just enough about them to get through.
Casey, touch and go for you as well?
No, not for me. I think it's a difficult tie. I think it's not done and dusted with Borussia Dortmund. I think you have to respect Julian Lopetegui's side. Sevilla have proven in European competitions that they can get results. So, yeah, although I think Dortmund are the favourites, 100%. They still need to perform, and albeit they should be a little bit disappointed with the way the result went this weekend and have something to prove.
Another German side flying the flag for the Bundesliga, of course, is Leipzig in the Champions League. They have got an uphill task, 2-0 down, taking on Liverpool at Anfield. Any chance for them, Derek?
There's a chance. It's an outside chance. And I think they're still kicking themselves after what happened in the first match. Because, yes, Liverpool were a little bit better, but it came down, for me anyway, to a couple of elementary mistakes by Leipzig. So I think they feel they're still in it. They are going to have to be without Angelino, who's been such a stalwart for them on the left-hand side this term. That doesn't help the cause. But Marcel Zabica is back. He's missed the last couple of games. And he really gives the team so much confidence in the centre of midfield. So given how Liverpool have been playing and given how well Leipzig have been playing in the Bundesliga, you can't argue with six successive wins. It's still on, but it is very much a long shot. I think that would be fair to say.
How are you feeling, Stevie, going into this?
I don't feel as though it's a long shot, I can assure you. My goodness. Listen, I was actually gone stato. I've looked the last eight games, right?
Yep.
And four of those eight games, Liverpool have lost by two or more goals. So them having a 2-0 lead does not make me feel comfortable whatsoever. So, no. Long shot? This is not a long shot. This is going to be tight.
But they did outplay Leipzig in the first leg. That's got to give you some heart.
Well, they did, but as Derek said, the only reason they scored a couple of goals is because they were given them more than anything else. And this is a team, Liverpool, that are struggling to create in every single game, regardless of the opposition. And we're talking about Leipzig, who maybe could win the Bundesliga this year. You can't give them a sniff. So I am not comfortable whatsoever.
Who have you got going for it?
I'm going to say Liverpool, but it wouldn't shock me if they didn't.
Well, Stevie mentioned the fact that Leipzig's still very much in the title race. Of course, just 2 points separate then and defending champions Bayern Munich. Derek, was it 10 matches to go, I believe? Are we going to have a proper title run in?
It looks that way. And of course, everything now points to the showdown in Leipzig when Bayern come to town on the 3rd of April. And that will tell us an awful lot about the race for the Meisterschale. Leipzig have got a difficult game coming up this weekend on Sunday against Frankfurt, who have just gone off the boil in the last couple of matches, but with a very interesting formation, with their two number 10s, if you like, have posed all manner of problems for opposing sides. I do think there's a resilience about Leipzig. I think they're also resourceful in terms of their tactics. They can change them from game to game. They're rarely predictable. You never quite know what little wrinkle they're going to throw at their opponents. And so, yeah, I would think ahead of that game on the 3rd of April, there won't be much between the two sides. And that could be a mini title decider.
Well, before that, for Bayern, they're up against Werder Bremen with the US striker Josh Sargent in form going into that clash. His sixth of the season here, Casey.
Yeah, no, it was great for Josh. I think Josh just needs to continue to put the ball in the back of the net. We know how well he works for the side. He's always moving. He's always unselfish. But as that striker, you just have to continue. I'm not saying that Josh has to be a 20-goal scorer a season for Werder Bremen because of all the hard work he does without scoring goals. But you still, as a striker, have to put up decent numbers. And he's doing that this year, and it's great to see.
Derek, you've seen a lot of Josh Sargent this campaign. How highly do you rate him?
Well, I can tell you that his coach, Florian Kohfeldt, really rates him highly. He's often said that he's one of the first names on the team sheet. Now, his goals record doesn't indicate that he should be one of the first names on the team sheet. But, of course, we have to get into how Bremen play, which is quite defensive-minded. It's not a great setup for a front man. Sargent, as Casey has said, does get through a power of work. He's a team man. He just needs to develop that next little phase in his career, which I think is confidence in front of goal. But he is showing it in the last couple of games, as we saw this past weekend in Cologne. So I think that there is definitely scope to develop for Josh Sargent. The question is he at the right team for himself? I think that's a legitimate question.
Derek and Casey, as always, thank you so much. Well, the Bundesliga, of course, continues this weekend. Saturday sees Bayern Munich away against Werder Bremen. Then it's Borussia Dortmund against Hertha Berlin. And on Sunday, what a game this should be. Leipzig entertain Eintracht Frankfurt. Take you back to December. Remember the clash between PSG and Istanbul? The players walking off because of what they heard from the official. Well, UEFA Control Ethics and Disciplinary Board have come to a decision about what to do with Sebastian Constantine Coltescu. He has been suspended from refereeing until June the 30th, 2021, and must attend an educational programme. Now, Coltescu violated Articles 11.1DR and 6.1GTC obligation to behave in an appropriate manner, but not Article 14DR, racism and other discriminatory conduct. UEFA officials should be adequately and specifically trained to make better decisions on the choice of language and words to be used in UEFA competitions. In the international context, correct use of language is essential to avoid situations such as those that occurred in the above-mentioned match. Well, Gab Marcotti is still with us. Gab, what do you make of this decision?
Well, I mean, without having access to the files and the testimony, maybe they'll be published later, I think we can pretty confidently reconstruct what happened that night. You'll recall that the accusation against Coltescu was that, you know, he was pointing out which player or which member of the Başakşehir coaching staff should be booked. And he said about Pierre Webbo, he said the black one. And he is the only person of color in the coaching staff. So I guess UEFA and this or the disciplinary body of UEFA came to the conclusion that it's inappropriate to describe somebody on the bench by the color of their skin or by their ethnicity. But that doesn't necessarily, or at least in this instance, that does not necessarily constitute racist or discriminatory conduct. It's simply an inappropriate way to refer to somebody. I believe that's a conclusion that they reach in this case. Obviously, without having been there and without having examined the testimony, I am speculating a little bit here. But certainly, had they found that there was racist intent behind it, that rather than, you know, casual use of inappropriate language referring to race, then you would hope that it would have been a much stiffer penalty.
Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you very much. More from Gab, as always, on a Monday over on the website. Be sure to go over and peruse his Monday musings.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A brand new show, Football America's, available now on ESPN+. Who better to describe what it's all about than the main hosts, Sebastian Salazar and Hercules Gomez?
Dan the Man Thomas, thank you so much for the introduction. Herc, what do you think was said around the ESPN FC table when those guys found out that if everybody involved in the show that gave you and me a new program.
I think I got a better response than you did. They were probably like, good, we don't have so much Seb in our lives. Wow, thank you.
Well, the first topic on our very first show today, no surprise, Christian Pulisic came on as a very late sub, 90th minute for Chelsea in their 2-0 win against Everton. Herc, it was interesting, the cameras panned to Pulisic just before he came on. Again, in the 90th minute, Herc, and you could see visibly the frustration on this player's face.
Well, context. Havertz was going to come out, and it wasn't him, and there was going to be Timo Werner, so he was upset that it was taking longer than it needed to be for to get on. But it's frustration nonetheless, because he's not playing. And it makes sense to me that he would be frustrated. Why isn't he playing is the question. Listen, we heard Stevie Nichol a few weeks ago saying, if you were Pulisic, if he was Pulisic, he'd be knocking on Thomas Tuchel's door. I think it's about time, because under Thomas Tuchel, he's got no playing time. Others have gotten an opportunity. I mean, we've seen, whether it's Giroud, whether it's Werner as a nine, Kai Havertz today was a nine, the two underneath, Hudson-Odoi, whether it's Ziyech, all types of different players get in a run, get an opportunity. And if you look at Christian Pulisic's minutes, that's not been the case. And this is a coach who knows him, knew him well enough to hand him his first team minutes at Dortmund, saw him have a breakout year the next season, the following season, 5 goals, 13 assists. And yet alone this season, it's not you, it's me. I'm sorry, you have to be patient. And that's not a good thing for Christian Pulisic.
0 starts under Tuchel in the league for Christian Pulisic. His 1 start came in the FA Cup. I want to show you, Herc, the quote from Thomas Tuchel when he was specifically asked about Christian Pulisic after the game against Everton. Very interesting stuff here and a little complex. Maybe his biggest problem is that I know him from Dortmund and I think he started only in the cup games. It is my responsibility and it is a bit unfair, but I know what impact he can have in the last 20 or 30 minutes. What do you make of what Tuchel is saying here? He's basically holding Christian Pulisic's past 3 years ago against him still.
This is a cop-out. It's a cop-out because if he really thought Christian Pulisic was good enough to help him reach Champions League status because they're not going to win the league, he would play. There is no manager on earth that says, you're too good, I don't want to put you in. Now, here's the thing. Under Frank Lampard, he had a situation where he wasn't playing, and then Project Restart happened. He wasn't just one of the best players in Chelsea. He was one of the best players in the Premier League. 11 games, 5 goals, 4 assists. Here comes Thomas Tuchel. A lot of this is also Christian Pulisic. You've been injured. You've had injury problems, muscular problems. It seems to be a trend. But you can't get on the field with Thomas Tuchel. He's not giving you the opportunity. So you should be frustrated. You should also take a hard, good look at yourself in the mirror and a knock on the door, as Stevie Nichol said. What am I not doing? What can I do? I want to play. I want to be here. Because we've learned at Chelsea, Kevin De Bruyne, Romelu Lukaku, Mo Salah, they were there briefly and then they left.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. A reminder, Football America is available Monday and Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Plus. Dan, we very gladly send it back to you.
Amen.
Thank you very much, guys. Meanwhile, in Scotland, Rangers, of course, celebrating after wrapping up their 55th title, stopping Celtic from doing 10 in a row. Steven Gerrard in charge of the champions. Don is still with us. Don, we kept you on because you're a big Rangers fan.
Yeah, my dad was a Rangers fan, so he drummed it into me when I was very little to support Rangers. And by the way, what an achievement. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the footage from Steven Gerrard's car, which has been viral. I think it just hits home to me, especially, Dan, when we're trying to commentate on games and watch games with no fans inside the stadium. And you see all the fans outside Ibrox. It was just sensational scenes.
You're a Rangers fan as well, Stevie?
I am, yes. Very. I was going to say similar to Don, but it was actually my next door neighbour.
Oh, yeah?
When I was a kid, aye. He used to get me, at my birthday and Christmas, he always got me like a Rangers tie or Rangers socks or Rangers hat. Just anything Rangers. That's basically how I became a Rangers fan.
Don, if we told you at the start of the season that this would be the deficit by which Rangers would win it, how big a surprise would that be?
Oh, it would have been massively. It would have been a huge surprise, Dan, because how they've done it has been incredible. I mean, still unbeaten. I mean, unbeaten not only in the Scottish Premiership, but in European football as well. You know, it's phenomenal what they've done. And to win the title at this stage, I mean, it's nigh on unheard of. So the job that Stevie G's done and his backroom staff, and congratulations to Gary McAllister and all the team behind the scenes, I think the players have been wonderful.
Steve Gerrard, heir apparent. Jurgen Klopp's next, Jurgen Klopp's next manager. Jurgen Klopp's replacement.
It's got to be on the cards, eh? If he keeps this up, yep.
You saying he should come in now? Get rid of Klopp now?
Don't be silly.
That is it. Thank you very much, everyone who has been on. Thank you to Don, Stevie and Frank. They will be with me on Extra Time answering your tweets, so be sure to stay tuned. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. As always, thank you very much for your tweets. Stevie with me, as is Don and Frank. Boys, got loads of questions, but I just want to ask one quickly from me. Me and Stevie were talking about old theme tunes, old shows, and it made me think of Match of the Day, which was kind of the establishment in England when you were growing up. There wasn't quite the coverage that you had now of all the games on television. It was the only way you could really watch all of the games. My question is, when you played, would you make a point of then watching Match of the Day afterwards? I'll start with you, Don.
Well, when you've played well,
right,
every single time.
Yeah.
When you've had a shocker, get rid, ignore it, didn't happen.
Really? You would just completely ignore it?
Yeah, it never happened.
Like watching a bad dream.
Exactly.
Stevie, would you go back and watch yourself if you won or lost?
I was in the pub.
Really?
Saturday night.
Just there.
Aye.
No. watching Match of the Day.
If it happened to be on, whatever pub was in the gym.
But you wouldn't make a point of it.
No.
Frank, when you were in England,
watching the pub,
would you watch yourself back?
Sometimes, you know, it's how I discover Mr. Hansen, I think, and Mr. Gray. I don't know if they were both there. But yeah, I was watching it. But like Don, when I had a good game, when I had a bad game, or shocker, as he said, never. Never.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes, Dan, the games can be a little bit of a blur.
Right.
But sometimes you watch it back to think, well, how did I do that? Or what mistake did I make there? So the 90 minutes just goes by so quick.
Let's do this. Frank, was PSG wrong to sack Thomas Tuchel after his incredible run with Chelsea so far? He has certainly proven that he can make a team good without relying on Mbappe and Neymar-esque type of player, as he was accused of by Jules of always relying on big players and having no plan.
I don't know if they're wrong or not. I think he lost something there in the dressing room, and it's so hard to be the coach of Paris Saint-Germain. I don't know what Pochettino is going to do with Paris Saint-Germain, but if Neymar or Mbappe or some others don't want to listen to the coach, it's like almost impossible to lead the team and do whatever you want to do. It seems to be easier with younger players at Chelsea, and even if they are quite stars, they still listen and still believe that the coach can lead them well. In Paris Saint-Germain, it seems to be different. And so many, we saw Ancelotti struggling. We saw Laurent Blanc before struggling. And we saw so many others struggling before Tuchel. And we all know that as long as the hierarchy is not really explained to the players, it's not going to work. And it's going to be always difficult to be a coach at Paris Saint-Germain.
Stevie, City lost to United means they are still not as good as we think they are. Do you think they can still win the quadruple?
I think they're good enough to win the quadruple. It depends whether they're going to end up being strong enough to play all of those games. You know, because at the end of the day, most teams sit on the edge of the box because they don't have a lot of choice. And so it's very difficult. You need that extra sting in your legs to make the difference, to get that extra half a yard when there's so many bodies in and around the box to capitalise on it. And so I think the amount of games will catch up with them, but they have the ability. It's just whether they have the physical strength with so many games.
Don, a lot of discussion as to why Liverpool have gone on this slump. This person says, in my opinion, Don is behind the Liverpool bad run of games. Ever since he commentated on the Liverpool Crystal Palace game, Liverpool haven't been the same.
I know, and I can remember my words in the game, Dan, when Liverpool are winning 7, and I said, this is moving week. Liverpool had West Brom and Newcastle, and I couldn't see Liverpool dropping any points. I thought when they walloped Crystal Palace, I thought they'd wallop West Brom and wallop Newcastle and end up at the end of that week being 6 or 7 points clear. Who knew?
That's pretty bad, Don. Is there something that eclipses that? Like, you think back still and that you think that's the stupidest thing I've ever said during a commentary?
I've said some stupid things. I remember one. When Newcastle were 4-0 down at half-time against Arsenal.
Wow.
And presenter asked me at half-time, is there any way back for Newcastle? And I went, not a chance. This could be 7 or 8. Newcastle got 4-4 yeah. St James's Park.
Oh, to be fair, that wasn't that. I think most people would have said that, Don.
No, I know, but still, I mean,
you in your know, top you, ten of stupid things,
you try and say
Shaka's yeah, next power rankings.
You try and say not a chance. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if Glasgow Rangers are not top of the power rankings on Thursday, I'm giving up.
And your obsession with Shaka's power rankings—you're the only one who cares, Don.
Frank, I know, it's sad.
Frank, who is partnering Varane for the Euros? Zuma, Koundé, or Upamecano?
Reina is still Langley. From Barcelona, but things can change, and I don't know if Zuma will carry on playing with Tuchel. I mean, he was playing with Frank Lampard, but he didn't play a lot. Well, he was a bit injured, but he didn't play a lot. Well, you know, they still have some games in hand that they have to play, and so many things can happen, and some others can come up, and you never know what's going to happen in Didier Deschamps' head. So far, I think the two favorites are Varane and Langlet to play centre half, but Zuma has his chance. And I think for Koundé, no, Koundé is too early. It's like Fofana, it's too early. Upamecano just arrived. Even Umtiti, I think, is above the two last players that you named.
Stevie, is it more important to have a man manager or a manager who excels tactically? Which would you prefer to play under?
Man manager.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even when you're playing poorly and even though the manager sets you out in a certain way tactically, if you're playing for him and the rest of your team and you're giving it, you can still get results. If you're not playing for the manager and also the guy standing beside you, it doesn't matter what the tactics are, you ain't getting far.
Do you agree, Frank?
I completely agree. I mean, I was ready to die for a coach who believed in me and told me that I was the best player in the world, even if he knew that it wasn't true. But I was ready to fight and to give my best. A tactic can be changed because you concede a goal after a minute. And like Manchester City against Manchester United, so you have to change stuff and you don't know what to do. A madman is going to put your head in like a robot motion and you're going to go for it and you're going to smash the opponent and you're going to win for him.
Here's the thing. When you're sitting, right, and the manager's going through all these tactics, right, if there's 20 players in the room, there's probably about five that get it.
Okay.
Because a lot of them just don't get it. You know, sitting on a bench 5 minutes into a game, I would be turning around to Paul next to me and going, what was the last thing I said to so-and-so? I told him not to do that. And he's done it already. So, you know what I mean? Half the players don't get it.
What was interesting, Gab brought it up during the show, Skriniar coming out after that Inter win, saying the good thing about having a week off isn't only that we get to physically prepare for games, but we also get more insight tactically for our opponent each time round. Does that make sense? Like, how much are they really aware of how the opponents play or who to look out for?
Well, he's probably repeating what the manager said.
So you're not buying it?
Well, listen, do you think for a second that Inter Milan's players don't know kind of what Atalanta are going to be doing?
I don't know, you tell me. Maybe they just don't bother.
No, well, they know the players. They've played them before. Atalanta don't really change the way they go about the game.
Right.
You know. I think this is more to do with him spouting out the stuff that the manager's saying. The manager's probably all week in the press has been saying, oh, this is great. We get time to rest. We get time to prepare for the next game, blah, blah, blah. And the players just repeat it.
Don?
I've got to say, when I was at West Ham, we'd done a lot of analysis work. And if you had a week off, like Antonio Conte's men have had, it would give you a lot of time, whatever day of the week it might be, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, if you want to sit down and watch the opposition and the analysts show you, you know, what Zapata might do in a certain situation, how he likes to run, the areas he likes to run in, what midfield players sit, what midfield players bomb on, where the weaknesses are, if the fullbacks are high up the pitch. If you can sit and watch that visually, because if the coach, you know, if Stevie's sitting down in front of, you know, me and say five others, and he's saying, right, the fullbacks are doing this and Zapata does this and Muriel does this when he comes off the bench, you can sort of take so much on board. But I was always, don't know if the lads agree, but if you've seen it visually and you watched it in a sort of relaxed environment, you could actually take more in when you're watching a video. You can watch them over three or four games. Yeah, and it just sort of sunk in a little bit more.
That must have taken at least 20 minutes.
No, but I think you've if you've got
days,
time to sit...
You've got 3 days.
Yeah, if you could sit
down and
watch
it... You've got at least 3 days in between a game. I mean, if you want to... It'll take you 20 minutes.
Yeah, but you could do
you
that.
Don't
you
have
could
20
do,
minutes to watch do, the same stuff.
Yeah, but you could do 20 minutes on a Tuesday, and then you could do exactly the same thing on a Friday, just reminding the players of what you've already seen on the Tuesday and footage from the previous game. I think it helps massively.
Oh, and by the way, have you ever been? Have anybody's never been in a room with 20 guys with a video playing of tactics and stuff? Again, there's at least half of them. I've got their eyes open, but there's nothing going on behind there. Because nobody, it's boring.
I think that tells you what it was like when Stevie was in there, because we wouldn't have got away with that.
Oh, yeah, you're telling me that? I will tell you something, I'll put money on it, that's no change. Yes, you're going to have three or four like this. They're always sat in the front, edge of the seat. And then there's going to be everybody who's got in first so they can get the back seat, so they can hide, because they can't be bothered.
Frank, the obvious question, 1998 World Cup final, how much did you focus on Brazil in the build-up?
Well, in fact, we didn't, because on top of it, you know, Ronaldo wasn't sure to play. We didn't know. They were saying that maybe he wasn't feeling well. Mm. And in fact, Emejaki said, we don't care. We don't care about them. Just take care of the corner kicks, because they don't really focus on that. So just play it 100%. Otherwise, guys, we are better than them. We're going to smash them. You have to believe that you are better than them. That was the tactic. Oh. Go for it, guys. I believe in you. That was it.
And how did that work out? Okay, who was the best trash talker, Don, that you played against? Did you give them lip back or just hit them with a two-footed tackle?
Oh, I could give a little bit of lip back. I did like a little bit of verbals. I think the Crazy Gang were quite mental when you stood in the tunnel next to John Fashanu and Vinnie Jones. They also took that on the pitch as well, by the way, so you had to look after yourself. But I think us three were in an era where you had to be strong, you had to look after yourself, you have to look after your mate. And verbals were a massive part of the game. In the tunnel, on the pitch, you had to look after yourself, you had to put your foot in, you had to take care of yourself. Some of my tackles, when I look back, are horrendous, but they had to be horrendous, because if I didn't go over the top on the likes of Vinnie Jones or Brian Robson or Norman Whiteside, they would go higher than me, and I'd end up with a broken leg, so you had to look after yourself.
But I'm looking at
what
you.
What are you looking at me
I'm
for?
I'm looking at you for a response.
Trash talking. What would you want to listen to anybody talking nonsense for in the first place? What's a lot of rubbish?
So you could just
play... Someone must have hammered you.
You would just ignore... You would ignore it all.
Absolutely. I don't remember anybody ever trash-talking on it.
No.
What a lot of nonsense.
Nonsense. It's important.
Oh, come on.
It's not important.
Well, hold on a second.
It's not important what happens.
And this is the other thing as well. Unfortunately, things become real that are just complete nonsense because of situations.
I know, like, where we're going. Like, we're going to FA Cup final.
Like, you're talking about FA Cup final.
There it is.
We've got all these numpties saying, we outsighted them in the tunnel. What, because they were shouting ship ahoy? You're talking about a Liverpool team, right, that had three Champions League winners in it, eight Premier or Championship winning, yeah, FA Cup winners before, been there, done it, seen it. Johnny Barnes played in the Maracanã and walked through 100,000 Brazilians, and then the players on the field are going to be put off by a bunch of numpties shouting, ship ahoy. Really? Oh, God. I can't believe people actually believe that.
It's rubbish.
Dan, I have a good story about...
we've run out of time, Frank, sorry. Frank, go on.
That was a very good story, and I will keep it for myself.
No.
Do I have the... I go for it? Okay. Don just mentioned the Crazy Gang. We played the semi-final of the FA Cup in 97, and we played it at Highbury. And everybody knows that the tunnel is very narrow. And Vinnie Jones was screaming, guys, we're going to kill them. We're going to smash them. You know, don't forget, it's going to be a war, you know. And Rigolet was standing between the two lines. and all the teams and all the players. And he said, you know, guys, don't worry. People who are shutting are people who are scared. So just go on the field and enjoy. And we won 3-0 against Wimbledon. So that was a good story.
Yes, yeah. Right.
So you like, weren't intimidated like Stevie was in the FA Cup final?
No, of course not. You know, of course not. We knew that we were better than Wimbledon. Liverpool didn't know that.
Oh! This can only go badly. We got one more. We have time for the other question. Let's do it. Let's wrap things up. ESPN SC will be back on your screens tomorrow. I forget who's playing. Porto, Juventus. What's the other game?
What are you looking at me for?
I don't know. Ah, oh, Dortmund.
Just do your job.
Dortmund, Sevilla.
Don't look at me
well.
To help you. Do your job
yourself.
I thought
you might be able to help me.
Why are you getting clever?
Trash talk him, Stevie. Trash talk him.
Yeah, exactly. Brought the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, would you know?
He's grumpy now.
Yeah.
Scare him.
Scared.
Oh, did you play at uni, did you?